Hello and welcome to the Who's in Charge podcast. I'm your host, Jack Lucas, and today I'm joined by former Lincoln City player Lee Beavers, as well as my co-host Mason Gear to discuss all things Lincoln City. Thank you for coming on today, Lee, onto the podcast. Just going to ask you a few questions about the ownership when you was at Lincoln City and your time, sort of when you was there as well, and reflecting on that. So if I could just start off with, what are your fondest memories whilst playing at Lincoln?
There was quite a few, to be fair. When I first joined, there was on a high through the Keith Alexander period. So I think I first joined in the first 4 years that we was there. We went to one playoff final and three semi-finals, I believe it was. Unfortunately, we never got all the way. We was always just pipped at the final post, but we've had some great memorable experiences. That, I mean, we had one when I think John Schofield took over, and him and John Dean, when they took over, I think we went on a run. If we would have gone from calendar year January to January, I think we'd amassed something like 110 points or something like that, and would have clearly won the league. It was just unfortunate. It was at the end of one season, at the start of the next season. But now, so first time round, them days were always going to be good. Then coming back into the team sort of just before the Cowleys came into the club, with Chris Moyes brought me back to the club, and he started to really build something. You've seen that the club was down in the Conference North and thought the club needed to get back where they were. And he started to build a good, solid, strong foundation. Brought in Reedy, that everyone knows and loves.
Yeah.
And was fantastic for the club. And then obviously the Cowleys come over and brought in their brand of football, and thought they could actually take us to the next step, which obviously you can quite clearly see that they did that.
Yeah, so just adding on to that about the Cowleys, of course, your first time at Lincoln obviously ended, and then you went off to Mansfield. Coming back to Lincoln, did you feel when the Cowleys came in there was really something that was going to happen, or was it more of you hoped but never really expected?
I think it all started with Chris Moyes. He had a belief in the club and in the city, of how the football meant such a big part to the community and around Lincoln, and he wanted to get that strong feeling back together and start to change a few things where the club was just sort of like passing itself by and not really trying to achieve anything. So like I say, he put in some good foundations. And then when the Cowleys came in, they had a strong desire to get promoted and wanted to get on to as far as they could with Lincoln City. And they felt that was the place for them and where they wanted to go. They seen that the club was a big club waiting to get back into the Football League. And they was able to do that. And they got brought in their own sort of players and got their own style on board and played this high press and tried to put other teams on the back foot.
Okay, so obviously when the Cowleys came in, as we all know, they sort of transformed Lincoln into what they are today, or at least helped them on that track. When you first came back to the club, what was your conversations with the owner like? Obviously Clive Nates, when he came into the club, really, really big figure, and is obviously still around the club despite heavy American investment. I think there's a lot to be said for what Clive's achieved and the sort of backing he's had with the club. Did you have any personal experiences with him?
No, I didn't have any sort of like personal dealings with him. It was more of he was sort of like in the background, but you could see he was someone that wanted to make something happen with the club. Again, a little bit like the Cowleys, he's seen something within the club and the city, and it was like a little bit of a sleeping giant that he was just waiting to progress and waiting to get through the leagues. And then he brought him a bit of backing with himself. He was able to do a few more things, obviously offer better wages to attract the better players to try and get up through them leagues. And that led from one thing to another. And then he's obviously put heavily a lot of money into the training ground, which obviously at that point before then, when I first came back to the club, I was training up at the barracks with no actual fixed training ground as such, and was a little bit moving from here to there. And then obviously the training ground was in a little bit of a back burner, but slowly gathering momentum. And then when we sort of like got promoted and back into the league, and then looked like we was going to go pretty much straight up all again, which we was there and doing, it was sort of inevitable that we were going to put the money in to get the training ground. So the backing that he's give the football team is phenomenal with his monies for the training ground and improvements around the ground now in the last sort of like year. You've seen obviously the Stacey West Ham being developed into sort of like a more modern football stadium, which I'm not sure whether they've got plans then to start to do what was the old Echo Stand.
Yeah.
And develop all of that as well, because it's, say that's the next part of the bit of the stadium, I believe, that they need to do, which no doubt he's probably looking at doing himself.
Yeah, I think going into the next few years, it's going to be interesting to sort of see where they plan to go from here. Obviously, there's been quite a good platform built, and with the heartbreak of just missing out on the playoffs this year, I think going into next year, there's obviously going to need to be quite a bit more investment and a bit more investment on and off the field. But that sort of leads me on to my next question, which is, how important do you feel like it is to have an owner that sort of understands football on and off the pitch? So you've got your training facilities, because what we see nowadays is a lot of owners come into a club and they will try and sort of pay to win, if you will. They'll buy all the best players and they just won't work and they won't really have an understanding of that. So do you think it's important for owners to have an understanding of both sides of the game?
Definitely. They need to have both sides, because you've seen teams in the past where chairmen have come in, or owners, and they've taken over clubs that are not doing so well, and tried to, like you say, buy themselves forward and get through the leagues by just sort of like saying, right, we're going to splash the cash, get in better players for the league and pay them stupid amounts of money. It only works for so long, because you get to a point where the players then sort of like aren't as good as what the teams are demanding the money that what they actually think they are. And you've seen it in the past couple of years, where you've got like yo-yo clubs that have been going up and down by trying to buy the ways into it. Like you've got obviously likes of Doncaster, which you've gone up and down through from the National League all the way up to the Championship and then back down all the way. And I think there was luckily this year, obviously they got into the playoffs, but I think going up to Christmas, there was looking like looking the bottom end of the league as opposed to looking for promotion. And then obviously closer to home, you look at the likes of Scunthorpe, which it was only a matter of years ago where they was up in the Championship, looking for playoffs in Championship, trying to push to get into the Premiership. And like you say, splashing the cash don't always work. You need to have that understanding on the pitch where it's not just about bringing the best players in. You need to develop the team and getting that team ethos and playing well as a team, not just individuals. So having that understanding between the business side of it and wanting it to do well and the football side of it, I think it's got a massive part to play.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Mason, obviously you're a Sheffield United fan, and the troubles they've had with their owner, as we discussed when I did your episode with you a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you think the same about football club ownership, that it needs to be both sides and not just on the pitch?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's funny you should mention, Lee, about becoming like a yo-yo club. I think with Sheffield United, I'm worried that we are going to become that. You know, as we mentioned in my episode with Prince Abdullah, he's not looking to pump money into the club. And I think that comes from a place of not having the money to do it. So yeah, I think you can have the best team in the world, but if you don't have good owners with good finances or large finances, I don't think you're going to be climbing the ranks anytime soon. So yeah, I think it does ultimately just come down to how much money your club has, really. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially for you, Mason, with the training ground talk, because we all know what happened with Sheffield United's training ground last year, where obviously they lost the rights to train there in the midst of a Championship promotion battle, which is never nice at any level, but especially that big level. But yeah, I'd say probably the understanding of both on and off the pitch is plays a really, really big role.
Definitely.
Now, one of the most promising things about Lincoln at the moment, I would say, is the sort of model that they've got going. The sort of buy to sell, buy low, sell high, and you can sort of reinvest that money. And obviously, when you was there for the second time, Lee, it was under the Cowleys, and obviously you had that, well, some might call it unexpected promotion, but I think for fans of the club, it was probably expected a long time in advance. Did you really start to see some young players coming in that you thought could make it in later years?
The second time, it wasn't, from looking back at it, I didn't see like was actually bringing anyone through the actual youth team and the ranks like that sort of thing. It was very much was taking sort of like younger players from sort of like bigger clubs that haven't actually achieved anything or looking for to try to find the way in the game. But it would, from something that was going to stand out and go on to sort of like bigger things, when obviously we picked up Rags, Sean Raggett, and he come in, you could see that he had a little bit of something about him. You could tell that he was going to be able to sort of like progress and go on to the next step and make that jump. Obviously, we had some great players in that team. I think we just all sort of like gelled together, really. And like you said, Lincoln have become this team of taking sort of like the younger players from bigger clubs and giving them that first step in football, which it's strange because it's gone out of the game now. Sort of like the reserve team football, you have these sort of like under 21s and going into the 23s games now where you get players that have been at the bigger clubs playing up until 23s and haven't had any first team experience. And then they're trying to get a career out of the game and they haven't had that experience and managers are reluctant to give them a chance because they haven't been tried and tested in men's football. I think the model that we've got in the country now for sort of like bringing the young players through, in some respects, I think it's good. We seem to be a lot more technical on the ball now than what we were sort of like 10, 15 years ago. Definitely, I think you've seen that going through the way that the football in England have changed over the last few years. It's more get the ball down and pass out from the back a little bit more how the Spanish were sort of like 15 years ago or so. We're almost sort of like playing catch up all the time. But with regards to the developing and bringing players through, I think there's a massive shortfall really between the 23s and sort of like senior football, if you like. Because say when I was sort of like coming through the ranks at the Ipswich when I was a youngster, it was like you'd be a first year scholar, 16, 17. And you'll be playing away at sort of like Arsenal, West Ham, Tottenham, and you'll be playing against actual first team players that are trying to get their fitness back up ready for the weekend or trying to get a little bit of match sharpness. And actually, it meant something on the game because it was an actual competitive league. Whereas now, I think there's a little bit too much put on development and, we're developing them. It doesn't matter about the result. It's how we develop and how we play the game. Whereas that's okay for us so far, but when you've, so like that's all you've been used to for 5 years at a bigger club, and then suddenly you get thrown into a League One, League Two team where it's win or nothing. It's a big shock to the system, and I don't think there's a few players that are quite ready for that.
Yeah. Definitely, I'd agree with the majority of that. I think sometimes you can sort of get a bit sidetracked into thinking about signing a player on loan from maybe a Premier League team to sort of build them existing relationships. For example, Lincoln, just a short few years ago in the COVID season, obviously notoriously had two very, very good wingers. One, Brennan Johnson from Forest at the time, who's now at Spurs and is obviously flourishing. And you had Morgan Rogers from City, who's now at Villa. So both Premier League wingers, both European level wingers that played at Lincoln just a short few years ago. And I think that was, for me, sort of the start of the system they're trying to build of getting clubs to trust them to develop those players. But I do think it's interesting that you mentioned about when the Cowleys were there, that there wasn't necessarily, it wasn't homegrown, it was finding players that had a lot to give, young players, but weren't necessarily going to get that chance at their parent club where they was at. I think it's changed quite a lot now, and obviously I know you're not a player for Lincoln anymore, but as a fan, and of course I know you go to quite a few of the games, I'm sure you can see that the development of the players on the pitch is really starting to happen with players like the Scottish midfielder, Irejon. I think he's come on leaps and bounds this season. You've got like Sean Rowan at the back, who is a homegrown player, Freddie Draper. All them sort of players are coming through, and I think it's making a big difference to how the club can operate as opposed to how they used to. But yeah, so the ownership style is obviously a little bit different now and from when you was there. Do you have any specific owners in mind or a person high ranking in the club, any club that you played at that you got on with quite well and any stories?
To be fair, it was one of them things I didn't really get much dealings with the sort of like the hierarchy in football clubs. It was very much left of sort of like this is the football side of it, that's the sort of like the club side of it, which I think in some respect I think it can be good that you try and distinguish the two and sort of like that, right, we're just the football side of it, we'll deal with what's on the pitch and let sort of like the owners and the business people sort of like deal with the aspects and the running the day-to-day club with the money side of it. So we never really had that much dealings with with hierarchy within the football club, whether it be the owners or the chairmen or people of senior figures, really. It's one that I never really had much dealings with.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. So one thing I have noticed is that quite a lot of ex-Lincoln players, after they retire, even despite the fact they might have gone to a different club, they always seem to come back around to Lincoln and make appearances at, like, for example, things like the Legends Lounge and stuff like that. Gavin Gordon being one of them. Obviously, you know Gavin. I've spoke to Gavin quite a few times. He speaks very fondly and highly of Lincoln. Why do you think that is, that so many players like to come back to the club years after they've played there?
I think it's something when we were talking earlier about the Cowleys and Chris Moyes wanting to get that feel-good factor back to the club. It's always had a strong relationship between the football club and the fans within Lincoln. It's kind of like a little bit out its way, and is sort of like, as a bigger clubs go, you've got to travel a little bit of a distance to get to them grounds. So when you get the players that come here and see like how the fans react to you. I mean, the first time when I was here we were sort of like 6,000-8,000 week in, week out, which is sort of like 15-20 years ago. Whereas then when I came out the second time, there was about, you'd be lucky if you got 1,000 there at a home game. And you can see that the more and more when the fans come, the players sort of like endear to the fans. And it's the city itself. You sort of like, you walk around and you see, like, obviously the cathedral up on the hill. It is a nice city to live in. So I think everything that comes with Lincoln City, the fans, the football club and the city itself, I think it just draws people to want to spend their time here.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously we spoke earlier about the training facilities at Lincoln and how they were improved. It's not specifically been stated. I think it might have been hinted at in a few interviews, but the FA Cup run that the club had during the season we got promoted in the National League was, I'd imagine, quite a big help to that, because one of the main problems Lincoln had in the years prior was supposed a little bit of financial troubles. But obviously that came in, changed all of that, them sort of things. What sort of, as a former player, if you was looking at joining the club, would having good training facilities and sort of recovery places help you decide where you wanted to go?
I think it has an important part of it. Yeah, it's because at the end of the day, you do join a football club, but you spend the majority of your time at training venues. You don't. Yeah. You sort of spend, I think it's, what is it, 23 times you'll spend at your actual home ground, and that's it. The rest of the time, you're 5 days a week at the training facility, whether that'd be an actual training ground or a recovery place that teams might have. So you do need to have something that's really up there and attracts players to come and want to play for you. And if you've got something like that, it's going to be a lot more valuable than not. I mean, if you turn up to a club and you say, like, oh, where are we training? It's like, oh, yeah, you have to take your car and you have to drive 15, 20 minutes across town to train, and then you get back in your car and then drive back over. It's going to turn everyone's nose up straight away. It's something that's some people see it as a luxury. I think it's one of the necessities that football teams need to probably look at, because it develops players a lot better as well, because you've got an actual base sort of like within the week where you can actually run from.
Yeah. Okay. So you obviously came through at Ipswich and then, of course, you was at Lincoln and then Mansfield and then Lincoln again. Out of all the clubs, I'm sure you had quite a lot of options when leaving Mansfield. Why did you really want to come back to Lincoln?
I had a little bit of unfinished business. I thought we should have got promoted the first time that I was around and getting into League One.
Yeah.
So I had that sort of like a bit of a burning desire to get them into League One, because we got to so many playoff semi-finals and finals, and thought sometimes we should have deserved to go up automatically. So I had a little bit of unfinished business here and always sort of like kept a bit of an eye on what I was doing when I was away from Lincoln. And it was one of them. It was a club that was just waiting to get back into the Football League. And it was something that I thought, right, well, if I go there, I think I'd like to try and play a part in getting them back into the Football League where I deserve the thought they should be. And luckily I was able to do that.
Yeah, good. What sort of, during your time at Lincoln, or in fact, I'll expand it, during your time as a footballer, what was your absolute best moment? And you might have touched on it earlier when I was asking about Lincoln best moments. And what was the real moment where you thought, yeah, I don't know if I can do this anymore, the sort of the darkest moment as a footballer, because we hear a lot about it nowadays that obviously your mental health as a person, as a footballer, is incredibly important. But it never really gets taken as seriously as it should. So I'll give you a moment to talk about the depths of being a football player, really, though, the best and the worst.
Yeah, well, probably up there with sort of like the best sort of feeling that you've had playing a game is sort of like probably getting promoted with Lincoln. I was part of the team for sort of like the first 3 or 4 months of the season before the injury occurred, but up until that point, I was obviously playing week in, week out, but still felt part of the team. And that relief on that final day, especially when I was injured and couldn't actually be part of the team and play, it was a massive relief. It's hard enough when you're playing in the games, but to watch a game in that place is ridiculous. So like the nerves and everything like that. There's quite a few. Say there's that up there. You've got obviously playing at the Millennium Stadium. With Lincoln a few times has been up there. Obviously, also say captain in Wales at 21s level against England a few times. So that those were sort of like some real good highlights and memories that you really 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 cherish. On the other side, like you mentioned, sort of like mental health and things like that, it does take a very strong character to be a footballer, because it's very cliche. There's a lot more dark times than there is good times with being a footballer. It's unless you're lucky enough to play for the likes of Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool, who just seem to win week in, week out, it's very difficult to get out of bed the following a defeat or a run of defeats or results that haven't been going your way. It is difficult. And I mean, when I dropped out of the full-time game and spent a couple of years playing non-league and sort of like training twice a week and playing on the weekends or playing midweek, and the lads that do that with putting that into full-time jobs, it does take its toll on you. It's hard graft. I think if I would have gone the other way and dropped out of the game early and had to sort of like get a full-time job and then try and forge your career out of it part-time, I don't think I'd have made it, because it is some serious long hours and some graft. You'll be, say, there's lads get sort of like getting up for work at like half six in the morning, doing a full 12-hour shift and then going out and then training on an evening. Travelling maybe an hour, 2 hours to a training venue to train for 45 minutes, to then 2 hours back, to then get up for work in the morning again. It's really demoralising sometimes. And I think that's where the sort of like, I knew it was kind of like enough was enough for myself, where I was sort of like needed to find something else to do on the second part of my life and try and forge a career in something, and getting up for work and then going out to work and then doing, like I say, doing a 12-hour shift and travelling an hour and a half to train for 45 minutes on an AstroTurf at 8:30 at night when you're traveling in the dark and it's very lonely, and you get all the way there and as you say you've got a training for an hour, but by the time you've got on there on an AstroTurf, and they say old age comes to you very quick when you're training on AstroTurf, it's meant to be all good for you with all this new technology, but it took its toll on my body, and traveling back was a nightmare. You're sort of like peeling yourself out of cars or work vans and things like that, ready to go again. So that was, that's where I kind of like knew that was enough for me with the traveling side of it. It did take its toll on you.
Yeah. All right. So I know, obviously you had all them years of professional football, and then obviously traversing the non-league football and the semi-pro side of it is quite difficult. We've heard stories like that before. Obviously, the Jamie Vardy one, probably most notably, when he went from the bottom to the top. And you've also heard stories about top to the bottom. I mean, I wouldn't exactly call it bottom, but obviously, examples like Edgar Davids at Barnet is probably something that you wouldn't really expect to see. So, Mason, as a Sheffield United fan, obviously, it's been a pretty it's been a pretty difficult last few years for the club, but I don't really know if you can call it that. Obviously, you went through the insane period under Wilder where you was in League One, and then you went all the way up to the Premier League, and now you're sort of struggling. You're losing a lot of players this year to free transfers. Just how different, if you can give us an example from what Lee said, just how different is it being a Sheffield United fan worrying about your team battling for promotion to the Premier League as it is potentially a Lincoln fan worrying about? Because the difference from a Lincoln fan going down to League Two and up to the Championship is probably a lot different to Championship to the Premier League, which is what Sheffield United. So if you could give us an example of what it's like to sort of deal with that as a fan, it'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to put into words, but I think it's... I don't want to get too... I know it sounds a bit weird, but I don't want to get too confident in United with their promotion pushes each season, because as you said, mentioned in my episode, that I think at the end of this season we're losing 17 players, I think it is, at the end of their contracts. We don't have the finances to extend their contracts. I think that's just going to be a key kind of rebuild. I mean, there's so many factors that come into play here. I personally don't really want to see Sheffield United in the Premier League anytime soon. I know that sounds very absurd, really, because obviously you want your club to do well. But I mean, this is a whole different ballpark. But I don't like the way that the Premier League is run. So I know it sounds weird, but I'd quite happily sit maybe mid-table Championship, as long as we're not. I don't really know how to put it into words, to be honest, mate. But I just don't agree with how the Premier League is run, to be honest. So.
Okay, that's fine. Obviously, it's well noted the struggles the club's had in the last few years.
Yeah.
But moving back to you, Lee, obviously, over the course of your career, I imagine your routines and things before games will change. But was there sort of a set sort of thing that you like to do the day of a game, or the day before a game, 10 minutes before, or anything like that?
Yeah, I had quite a religious sort of like start to a game, really. So it all pretty much started on a Friday afternoon. Finished training, I used to sort of like force drink 2 litres of water as soon as I finished training before I went to bed. I'd always have sort of like a pasta dish before bed on the day of a game, and then always wash it down with a cup of tea and a bar of Cadbury's cookie crumble. A bit gutted that it's now gone, not being stocked anymore on the shelves. But yeah, that was my sort of like routine on a night time. And then in the morning, it was always the same. No breakfast, and then 3 hours before kickoff, beans on toast with 2 poached eggs on 3 rounds with, say, water and a glass of orange juice and a cup of tea. And that was pretty much it, standard from when I was probably about 14 all the way through. And even now, I'm playing in charity games and things like that. Everything, even now, it's exactly the same. If I'm doing anything, whether it be a charity game like last week, or sort of like did a charity run or anything like that, the routine for it is exactly the same. It's really bizarre. And then even getting onto a match day, superstitions wise, it's even now, even just playing social cricket, I do everything the same. It's I start on my left foot and then go to my right foot and then go back from my right to left. I can't go left, right, it has to be left, right, left, right. And yeah, whether it's socks or shin pads, boots, anything, it's really bizarre. Really bizarre.
Well, fair play. I mean, I suppose it's difficult to sort of get out of a habit that you've been in for so long, especially when you're doing it at such a high level. I suppose you never really are going to move out of that habit. So I think we've pretty much covered everything. All I would say is, I'll ask you a question. Do you have a prediction for the next 5 years at Lincoln?
As daft as it sounds, I'd like to see bit similar to you, mate, about Sheffield United, sort of like where they are. I think you can compare the two teams quite similar, really. I think Sheffield United going into the Premiership probably a little bit too soon, maybe, for them after being relegated and coming from League One. A little bit same with Lincoln going from National League only sort of like 5-6 years ago to suddenly almost fans expecting to be in the playoffs or getting automatic promotion week in, week out and playing this lovely football that they want to do. But I'd like the same. So like a few years, sort of like not mid to maybe sort of like pushing for playoffs. I know the heartache of missing out on playoffs, and you get all the expectations with the fans and things like that. But sort of like making the playoffs every year for the next sort of like 3 years would probably be a good return. And then when you get into sort of like years 4 and 5, really have a good go then, because you sort of like you've really established yourself as a League One team. And then it's like, right, we kick on now and we go again. To do it now, and you see these clubs, and you go back to sort of like the Scunthorpes, where they go bang, 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 promotion, promotion, promotion. It's not often that you see them stay up there. Luton, I think, maybe a little bit of an exception, but they were sort of like a little bit of a sleeping giant, which there was always a big club. and they always have been. And I think they just got stuck down in the lower leagues of the football pyramid and were struggling to get out of them. But you can see now that they had all the resources and everything in place way before the football team was doing well. I think at this moment in time, I think Lincoln's the opposite way around. The football team's doing well, but I don't think they've got the capacity to actually sustain it, especially with the way that the money in football is now and the fair play and the money regularities and things like that.
Yeah. Okay. So that's pretty much everything covered on the football side or the professional side, should we say. So to end off the podcast, we always like to do just quite like a little silly, jokey type of thing. I'm going to ask you a question, and that question is, outside of football, what is your favourite sport? Now, I think I might know the answer, and I hope I know the answer. If not, I'll be pretty disappointed. But yeah, I'll let you take it away.
Well, there's a few, to be fair, but I don't know. At the minute, it's close between probably darts or cricket at this moment in time. But I'm enjoying throwing a couple of arrows every now and then. Coming up against Jack a few times over a few games, and we do enjoy a Friday night down, and hopefully we get the top of the league this year and be finished champions.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, if we end up winning the league this year, we'll have to do another podcast just talking about the season and the season as a whole.
If that does happen, we've got to try and get Cookie on as well, though.
Oh right, mate. if we're able to win the league this year, we'll do a podcast of the team and just sort of talk about the season. But yeah, that's pretty much everything done and dusted for today. Thanks very much for coming on and giving us some insight onto pretty much everything in football. The ownership side of it, the personal side of it. It's been a really interesting conversation to listen to, and I'm sure everyone listening will agree as well. Thanks very much for coming on. You've been listening to the Who's in Charge podcast. Thank you very much, and goodbye.